Thomas Edison, Man of the Millennium, Volume 3, Observations. Written by Harry T. Roman. Narrated by Kat Lookabaugh. Introduction. Thomas Edison was unquestionably the world's greatest inventor, and in this series, I want to present a personal look at the man and what he achieved. I have been engaged in Edison hero worship for almost 60 years, since boyhood. As you will hear in the audio to follow, I have an ongoing history of lecturing and writing about Edison. I bring all this information to your doorstep, and I hope you enjoy my thoughts and observations. Here are the three volumes in this trilogy. Volume 1, The Man and His Legacy. Volume 2, Lifetime Partnerships. And Volume 3, Observations. Harry T. Roman. Edison and Electric Cars. Background. In the early 1900s, Thomas Edison pioneered the development of a new alkaline-based battery system that has come to be known as the nickel-iron storage battery. This project was a 10-year effort involving a great deal of manpower and many, many experiments. More than 10,000 experiments, as a matter of fact. Edison envisioned this technology being the centerpiece of electric vehicles for clean city travel. His wife, Mina, could be seen driving her personal black Brougham electric vehicle around town. She could easily recharge this car in the Edison garage on their Glenmont property. Even then, Edison was giving us the model for electrically refueling our cars right in our own garages. Electric vehicle enthusiasts proudly champion this refueling method today. Old news to Mr. Edison. He electrically refueled his car in 1908. Marketers touted early electric vehicles as cars for refined women, since they really didn't need any cranking or mechanical tinkering. Cranked vehicles of the day could be very dangerous. The crank could kick back, breaking an arm, and often did. With an electric vehicle, you just turned a key and off you went. Edison always believed electric vehicles would be an ideal city or interurban mode of transportation. His philosophized railroads would be the long-haul transportation form, and electrics would be the preferred method about town, instead of smelly horses with their waste left all over the streets. He thought horses quite dangerous, well past their time in crowded cities. Prophetically, Edison firmly believed if gasoline was the choice for car fuel, it would be no better than horses, fouling the city air and eventually becoming difficult and costly to obtain. How right he would be today. Edison envisioned a car that had the ability to travel 30 to 60 miles on a battery charge. Quiet, clean, and used locally. The challenge for electric vehicles. Using electric vehicles today does provide a number of significant benefits for the American people. Removal of dependence on foreign oil. Cleaner air in our cities. No need for local and often polluting gasoline refilling stations, ability to refuel our cars at night in our own garages, and the infrastructure to replace gasoline, the electric utility already exists. It is capable of handling the task. Unfortunately, Edison's batteries suffered from not being able to pack enough energy into a small space, and their range was limited to mostly within the city. There have been many improvements to batteries since, but electric vehicle operating range today is still limited compared to that of traditional gasoline-powered vehicles. For a battery-equipped electric vehicle to compete equally with a gasoline-powered car requires that batteries be able to store 10 times as much energy as they do now, a very difficult technological task indeed. A great deal of energy comes through the hose from a gasoline pump. Gasoline is energy-intensive. We are able to travel hundreds of miles on a full tank, and Americans very much enjoy this freedom to move around, anytime and any place. A huge and intricate network of gasoline refilling stations is available in every state to serve our needs. The American public enjoys a very strong bond with their cars. As an interim compromise between the energy intensiveness and long-distance capability of gasoline cars and the clean recharge capability of electric vehicles, we are seeing hybrid cars today that combine the best of both worlds. batteries and an internal combustion engine can now work together. In the future, we are likely to see other forms of electric cars, like those powered by fuel cells running on clean hydrogen gas. The only emissions from a hydrogen-powered vehicle would be water. The question would be, how do we generate the hydrogen in the first place, and how do we move this potentially explosive gas around? The car companies have examined and developed hydrogen-based concept cars to gain a better understanding about how such cars would operate and impact our existing infrastructures and roads. It is possible to feed fuel cell cars with plentiful natural gas and strip the hydrogen molecules directly from the methane fuel, eliminating the need to transport hydrogen fuel all over the place. Time and much R&D will tell. Edison's work in perspective. I find it somewhat ironic that Henry Ford and Thomas Edison were very good friends, especially since they were on opposing sides of the automobile issue. Sitting in Edison's garage at Glenmont today, alongside his early electric cars, is a 1922 Model T that Ford gave him. These two inventors had very different visions for the automobile. Edison saw it as a local transportation provider, able to negotiate the city streets and provide a cleaner replacement to the horse. Railroads could take care of long-distance travel. Besides, I think Edison realized many electric vehicles recharging at night would be a nice way to keep his little neighborhood power plants running all night long. Ultimately, it would be the most efficient way to operate them. Edison did not invent electric vehicles. He revolutionized them with a highly rugged, very dependable battery pack. Ford determined that Americans wanted to go where the railroads do not and yearned for getting way out into the country. He developed a low-cost car to do just that. Its popularity soared, and along with it came the road and refueling infrastructures. The rest, as they say, is history. But clearly, we need to do something today. As Edison so accurately predicted, our city and country air have become so polluted. Many people are also talking about using corn and other plant-based ethanol alcohol as fuel supplies to extend limited gasoline supplies and also help clean the air. Historically, Edison's nickel-iron storage battery was a very successful technology for his company and may have been his most profitable business. These batteries found application in mining, railroad, marine, and military applications and are still used today. The original Thomas Edison Company's battery business was the last of its businesses to stay in operation after Edison's death, well into the 1970s. Integrated circuits, transistors, vacuum tubes, and the light bulb. The Edison effect. A definite link leads back from the sophisticated integrated circuits in our computers to the venerable light bulb. Edison's humble light bulb is where the Wizard of Menlo Park first discovered his Edison effect, and it would later revolutionize our lives in such profound ways. Indeed, the light bulb has become the basis of today's information age. While trying to prolong the life of his early bulb filaments, Edison and his laboratory assistants noticed a dark spot on the glass bulbs near one end of the filament. This dark spot was not germane to the filament's life, so they did not pay much attention to it. Later, Edison experimented with a specially designed bulb, inserting a separate electrode. Soon he was able to measure a current flowing in this new electrode. How could this be? No direct electrical connection occurred between a glowing filament and this new electrode. So how could an electrical current flow? What was the source of this current? Unable to understand what was happening, Edison dutifully recorded his experiments, and he patented the effect in a usable embodiment with his nascent electrical utility demonstration in New York City. Today, we know what this series of experiments signifies. The heated element is boiling off electrons that are then moving through the vacuum in the glass bulb and hitting that new electrode. This electron flow can be accelerated, enhanced, or even stopped by changing the element's polarity. If positive, current flows more readily. Negative polarity hampers the current flow. Thanks to Edison, it became possible to move electricity through a vacuum without a direct electrical wire link between elements. This finding occurred before anyone actually discovered and understood the electron. Blunder or misunderstanding, whatever the choice of the reader, Edison's careful experiments helped both theoretical science and applied engineering make significant advances. Fleming in England and De Forest in America eventually understood how to harness this effect. Fleming did so with his diode, or valve as he called it, two-element vacuum tube. De Forest harnessed it with the triode, three-element vacuum tube, that enabled amplification. These two vacuum tubes led directly to the advent of radio and early electronic circuits. We use diodes for rectification, triodes for amplification and switching. The original Edison effect is more accurately described today as thermionic emission. Vacuum tubes and transistors. Vacuum tubes became the mainstay of radio, TV, radar communications, computers, and medical equipment into the 1960s and 1970s. Events at Bell Laboratories in 1947 completely reinvented electronics, making it possible for semiconductive substances under certain conditions to permit electricity flow. Called solid-state electronics, it was now possible to make electricity flow through structures as easily as it moved through wires and the empty space of vacuum tubes. Called the transistor, this three-element device, analogous to the triode vacuum tube, was now made of tiny slabs of solid germanium and silicon, carefully treated with conductive atoms. Like a vacuum tube, transistors can be used to amplify signals or perform as fast-acting switches. In 1947, Shockley, Brattain, and Bardeen received credit for inventing and developing the transistor. Very much smaller in size and power needs than bulky and not-so-long-lived vacuum tubes, transistors soon found great application. Radios now became small enough to carry in a shirt pocket, powered by a simple battery. In fact, all electronic equipment became much more compact, as well as much cheaper to build and operate. More electronic power could now be packed into a smaller volume. It was no longer necessary to be near an electrical outlet to operate an electronic device. Portability was another chief advantage in moving to transistorized devices. However, deep inside those tiny slabs of silicon, the same switching action of a vacuum tube was still operative, the same thing Edison had observed so many years earlier. Printed and integrated circuits. It did not take long for this trend of creating miniature electronic circuits to gain momentum. Soon, the heavy metal chassis characterizing the vacuum tube era of electronic device design gave way to mounting small transistors on separate printed circuit boards, each dedicated to a specific function within an electronic device. Soon thereafter, these printed circuit boards morphed into many printed circuit boards etched onto a single piece of silicon, making it possible to put microprocessor capability on a single chip. This micro-miniaturization was so rapid that a new engineering rule of thumb soon emerged, one that became a significant measure of the times. Known as Moore's Law for the past 30 years, the amount of electronic horsepower available, computing power, on a chip doubles about every 18 to 22 months and is expected to do so for many more decades, signifying exponential growth on a massive scale. The iPods, personal computers, laptops, cell phones, and electronic gadgetry that mesmerize everyone are just the beginning of what is to come. This incredible technology makes all sorts of national defense capabilities possible, sophisticated medical treatments commonplace, and tremendous telecommunications options available for all of us. The final word. Things are accelerating rapidly, and if Edison were alive today, he might lament that he should have realized the significance of what he had discovered. But it all had to start somewhere, and Edison was the one that did give us the first electronic experiments, even if he did not fully understand what he had discovered. Again, his lack of a theoretical underpinning and minimal mathematical education cost him an understanding, but he certainly did shine nevertheless. Thomas Edison, Information Geek. Information as a feedstock. With all today's talk about the information age and the world being flat with respect to access to information, it's amazing how much Edison valued information 130 years ago. It formed the centerpiece of his work and the foundation of his invention factory concept. Having been nurtured and homeschooled by his teacher mother, young Tom learned the value of information, both for pleasure and useful ends, early. His mother encouraged him to, and he did, read voraciously throughout his long life. Edison's Glenmont home contained several thousand books he mined for useful technical information, as well as texts for reading pleasure. Edison firmly believed the only way he could seriously invent was to understand first what had already been done and what technologies were already out there that he might use as a feedstock for his idea generation process. With patent applications today, the applicant must perform a due diligence survey of the technology art. Known as prior art in the field that applies to the patent application, it demonstrates to the patent examiner that one understands the known art and what it implies in relation to the patent being applied for. This knowledge sets the stage for new innovation upon that which is already known and practiced. In addition to his home library, Edison had a massive library in his West Orange lab. This collection contained books, periodicals, reference resources, and technical journals for him and his staff to use. It is noteworthy that Edison's library also served as his office, keeping those all-important information resources very close at hand. In fact, we might credit Edison with teaching us that the key to good R&D labs is to keep such libraries close by. Indeed, today many top-notch R&D outfits do work very closely in concert with their corporate libraries or have their own technical library within easy reach for lab members. I can only imagine what Edison would have been capable of if the internet had been available to him. It is interesting to muse about how a man like Edison, with only months of formal schooling, came to have such a fond regard for information and learned how to make it the linchpin of his inventive efforts. His great reverence for knowledge demonstrates to me the process skills he employed to develop his R&D lab concept. Further, it reinforces my belief that Edison was not a slave to a simple trial-and-error shotgun approach to invention. Deep thought, as well as blood, sweat, and tears, went into his efforts. This great inventor produced and left us 4,000 laboratory notebooks filled with his insights, ideas, sketches, and drawings, plus other forms of documentation, more than 5 million pages of information in all. He may not have been schooled in the conventional sense, but he certainly came to develop the rigors of deep thinking, focusing his attention on the problem at hand. Edison's quote about invention being 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration totally describes his work ethic, and raw information was the fuel for his imaginative fire. Edison was not a very big fan of the schools of his time, and I think his opinion would be the same of the ones we have today. He felt they taught lots about facts and figures and little in the way of actually applying them. Edison relished admonishing young college men for how little they actually knew about engineering and technology application. He hired some really good ones, all right, because as technology became more complex, Edison needed to have people around him who could understand and cut through the mathematics and theory. His R&D lab model was broad enough to recognize the need for subject area experts. The value of information. Edison taught us the value of hands-on, team-based learning, not necessarily vocational training, the mention of which still rankles many educators today. We seem to want to send everyone to college to become great thinkers and earn huge salaries, but few really ever rise to such heights. The world needs people who can apply technology toward useful ends. This statement is as true today as it was in Edison's time. There is no shame in being this kind of person, whether one goes to college or not. It's about transforming information into competitive knowledge. A great American economist of our past, Julian Simon, was fond of describing technology as the process we use to convert what we have, resources, money, time, people, power, and information, into what we want and need, products and services. This description is rather profound. It jives with Edison's belief in information's fundamental value as feedstock for technological invention. Not as literate, and certainly not as profound as Simon, Edison felt his convictions more viscerally, and he practiced them every day. The two would have much to talk about. We add value to things, inventions, when we add information and knowledge to them. Our brain power, thinking processes, and life experiences help to determine the shape of solutions to human wants and needs. This combination is what makes teams so important in R&D and inventive activities. It brings together a variety of team members' life experiences, their collective knowledge and wisdom, and different approaches to problem solving. The team shares information and knowledge to solve the problem at hand, and it disbands a whole lot smarter than it convened. Thomas Edison believed in team power, deep in his creative soul. And I, for one, am very glad that he did. Visionary of the digital economy. Characteristics of the digital economy. Looking at today's information age, we can find it characterized by 1. A profusion of computers and computer-based applications. 2. Varied and information-rich resource formats, words, pictures, videos, diagrams, hypertexts, etc., often accessible through electronic means, like the Internet. 3. Pervasive communication options via hardwire, satellite, radio, and the Internet. And 4. Reliable electricity infrastructure powering 1, 2, and 3 above. This frenetic-paced, information-rich world makes it possible to compete globally and create markets for new products and services almost instantly. Over 60% of our nation's annual economic growth is directly attributable to advances in science and technology, fueled by and for the information age. The lifeblood of this digital economy is electricity, its application and reliability. To be able to handle the coming torrent of information requires nothing less than a sturdy, reliable, robust, and self-healing electric utility industry. Outages can put business transactions at risk, cause loss of valuable information, and waste time, causing missed business opportunities. The four pillars of the digital economy are CICE: computers, information, communications, and electricity. These elements must work seamlessly together to maintain the nation's high standards of living and compete globally. Moreover, our children must be prepared to live and function in this dynamic world. So where does Thomas Edison fit in? Edison, visionary. Let's take a look at Edison's inventions and place them in the same four categories as the pillars of the digital economy. We'll start with his early work with the stock ticker, telegraph, telephone improvements, recorded sound, phonograph, and dictation machines, motion pictures, and movie making. These early big inventions are certainly communications related. One can also consider them information related. They contain the very basis for meaningfully transferring bulk information at high speeds, a very important aspect of the digital economy. Furthermore, Edison made this captured communication and information portable, so many could reproduce and use it for increasing human knowledge and entertainment around the world. Consider Edison's groundbreaking work with codifying his concept of an invention factory, where team-based problem-solving using technology-specific experts has now formed the basis for highly productive large corporate and collegiate R&D departments. Some would say this invention could be his most significant, as it gave us the keys to invention on demand and a way to perpetuate our industrial revolution indefinitely. Surely this invention process or method is an information-related one. Moving to Edison's electric light development and the consequent electric generation and distribution of electricity, we find him responsible for giving us the modern electric utility system. He furthered this work by inventing a whole new battery technology, the nickel-iron storage battery, and electric trains. But certainly, there can be no doubt about Edison's role in the electricity-related aspects of the digital economy, as discussed earlier. That leaves us with only the remaining aspect of the digital economy, the computer. We discussed it earlier. Edison's work with the light bulb and the Edison effect led directly to developing vacuum tubes, leading to transistors, leading to integrated circuits, and voila, the computer. There you have it. Edison had a hand in all of the fundamental precepts leading to today's digital economy. Thomas Edison and Benjamin Franklin. Thomas Edison and Benjamin Franklin were two great men of America's history. Both men changed the course of history, and both left the world vastly better off. Not only did they create lasting inventions and ideas, but their ways of thinking and solving problems are probably more important than their inventions. They spent their days improving the lives of fellow citizens. Edison and Franklin began life in modest families and learned the virtues of hard work and personal responsibility early. They wasted little time on frivolous activities, taking life seriously and learning as much as they could from the world around them. Both were on their own at an early age, making their ways using determination and confidence. Edison sold candy and his own created and printed newspaper on the Grand Trunk Railroad in Michigan. His little newspaper talked of life along the railroad line and nearby communities. He even found time to conduct chemical experiments in a boxcar on the train while resting between train runs and stopovers. Franklin worked as an apprentice printer in a variety of small printing shops. Here, he developed a passion for writing and publishing his own newsletters, pamphlets, and booklets. Both men knew and practiced the art of business enterprise, and both learned how to sell something of value to customers. Creativity and invention came naturally for Edison and Franklin. They loved to research problems and solve them in practical ways. Franklin invented the Franklin stove, bifocal glasses, a musical instrument made of glass, an harmonica, and a number of other useful items. Edison invented the phonograph, electric light, motion pictures, and many other things. Both men also played key roles in discovering new scientific principles. Franklin pioneered the basics of static electricity and its fundamental similarity to lightning. Edison discovered the basic principles for radio telegraphy, transmitting electromagnetic waves through open air, and how electrons can be used in vacuum tubes. At the time, he did not completely understand what he had discovered, but today, Edison's discoveries form the basis of radio and all electronic circuits. As you can see, Edison and Franklin were both heavily involved with electricity and its practical application. Franklin's work led to the everyday application of lightning rods and protecting tall buildings from dangerous lightning strikes. Edison perfected the idea of producing bulk amounts of electricity in large generating stations and distributing it to stores, businesses, and eventually homes. These efforts formed the basis of today's electric utility system, the very same system that powers all our important computer-based economy today. Both men not only invented items of use to society, but also invented whole new industries that have endured throughout the ages. Franklin gave us the modern post office, public lending libraries, and fire departments. These institutions have become important parts of our daily lives and communities. Edison created the electric utility system, as we discussed before, and the recorded sound and motion picture industries that provide us with so much enjoyment and entertainment. Edison and Franklin teach us something very important about leading productive lives. Each man developed a deep and lasting love for continuous learning. Throughout their lives, they read and studied science, literature, poetry, history, and technology. This profound love of learning helped provide the basic building blocks that would generate those wonderful ideas and concepts that are still inspiring our imaginations today. Both men enjoyed working with others when solving problems and developing new ideas. Today, we talk much about teamwork and leadership, but Edison and Franklin were taking part in such things many years ago. They also enjoyed good humor and funny situations. These men knew the creative and healthy value of humor in their lives and used it when working with others. Edison and Franklin were both big thinkers, not afraid to be revolutionary in their application of knowledge. Franklin played a key role in creating our form of government, a truly incredible accomplishment. He helped hammer out the basic principles upon which our economic and political freedoms rest and how a democratic form of government protects them. Edison showed us how anyone can duplicate his basic principles of inventing and scientific thinking. Today, we have research and development departments in all our major companies, one of Edison's greatest inventions. These R&D departments apply Edison's thinking methods and continue to produce inventions and new ideas. His inventive methods have endured the years and benefited the world's citizens, just like a sound government. Money and great personal wealth did not interest Edison or Franklin. For them, the sheer joy of using their minds and applying solid thinking and logic to solving problems was what motivated them. They also left detailed accounts of their lives in journals, notes, and observations so others could learn from them. Edison was so productive in his documentation that he left us more than 5 million written documents about his lab experiments, ideas, inventions, and concepts. Both men had a great capacity for planning and organization before they acted. Thinking things through carefully was a common trait. How they solved problems was as important as what problems they solved. As a final thought, consider the remarkable commonality between these great men. Both had sons who were governors of New Jersey. About the author, Harry T. Roman holds 12 U.S. patents, has received numerous engineering, invention, and teaching awards, and has published more than 550 scientific papers, articles, monographs, and books. In 1999, the New Jersey Technical Education and Engineering Association named Roman a Distinguished Technology Educator. In 2005, the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame honored him with an Inventor of the Year Award for his application of mobile robots in hazardous work environments. In 1996, IEEE honored Roman with a Meritorious Achievement Award for developing continuing education products for IEEE members. Again in 2006, IEEE honored him with an Outstanding Engineer Award. Roman received IEEE's 2015 Region 1 Excellence in Teaching Award. Every month, more than 250,000 educators read his feature articles in various national publications. In PSE&G's R&D group, where he worked for 36 years, Roman directed and consulted on over $100 million worth of projects and programs. He also taught graduate-level R&D project management courses at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. Throughout his engineering career, Roman worked with schools around the state, bringing the excitement of real-world problem-solving into the classroom. Retired since 2006, he has published more than 70 resource books, math card games, and science kits for teachers, products valued for their head-in-hands approach to teaching creativity, invention, STEM, engineering, and alternate energy topics in the classroom. Roman now spends many hours in the classroom, working with teachers and students in West Orange, Montclair, and Livingston, conducting special student project team challenges. He is an advisor and author to the Edison Innovation Foundation, as well as a docent and special lecturer at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park in West Orange. Roman also admits to writing and publishing poetry and short stories. For the past 3 years, he has been teaching graduate school at Montclair State University in their teaching college, where he co-teaches a unique course about applying STEM techniques in the classroom. This has been Thomas Edison, Man of the Millennium, Volume 3, Observations, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lookabaugh.